Welcome to Paradise in the Pines, a podcast about the people, places, and stories that make this the home of American golf. Brought to you by the Pinehurst Southern Pines Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Welcome to this special episode of Paradise in the Pines. I'm Dan. I'm normally sat over there producing this thing. But we're all on a week off right now from the Convention and Visitors Bureau. We're at home with our families celebrating Christmas. And so we thought this would be a good week to bring a special episode to you that's recapping all of the things that are coming to the home of American golf next year in 2024. We talked to a bunch of people, movers and shakers from all over the county and all over the country, really. This season on Paradise in the Pines, and so I've gone through and I've collated together the times that we talked about what's coming next year. So enjoy, get excited, and we'll see you next year in the home of American golf. Happy New Year. First episode this year, episode 23, Phil sat down with Jessica Halling and talked about the new distillery she's opening, Beehawk Distillery, coming in 2024.
Distillery. Talk about location, talk about size. I mean, it's a pretty ambitious facility, and this is just stage one that you're considering. So this is a multi-phase project over a course of years. Talk about the project, how it came about after the initial research and deciding this is what we need to do.
There's a lot of branches and sequels to this story.
Yeah,
but I bet. I think the main thing, Phil, is that we wanted to be members of our community. So there's a variety of business models we could have selected. We could have just sourced product with a beautiful label, and a lot of companies do that, and they're very, very successful in doing so. But we wanted to be members of this community. And we also wanted to have a presence as a veteran-owned business. It's very important to us to behave as ambassadors of retired military veterans and all military veterans. And we wanted a really special place. And so we knew we wanted it to be big enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we relied on experts as to what type of facility would meet those goals, really. And so we landed on what we're calling a regional destination distillery. It's about, it'll all told, maybe just short of 16,000 square feet,
mm-hmm.
Where we'll have a manufacturing plant and a dedicated blending and bottling area, a storage building to start, a cocktail bar with a lounge associated with it. So porch is a real nice place. Mm-hmm. Small event space and offices.
Phil spoke with Tom Pashley about Pinehurst's extensive plans, including an entirely new golf course, the 10th golf course at Pinehurst.
Tom, you're here. Congratulations once again on announcing Pinehurst number 10. I don't think it was a matter of, you know, when, it wasn't a matter of when, how are you going to do it, but when. So what made this the right time?
Yeah, we've as you know, we've been sitting on this land for a couple of decades. It was acquired on two different occasions. The first piece of land was kind of acquired in the late 90s, and then the Pitt Golf Course closed in 2010. We acquired it in 2011. So we've had land for future golf for several decades. Core Crenshaw did a routing back in 2012 that we were just sitting on. At the time, we didn't need more golf. And so now, is we've seen golfers return in record numbers. Members are playing record numbers of rounds of golf right now. We need more golf. And so luckily we have this land where we can dream about future golf. And so we decided the time is right. We need to do it. But golf architects right now are super busy.
Right.
And so, you know, Corin Crenshaw, who had already done the routing, you get in touch with those guys, and they're a couple years away from being able to take on a new project. So then we were thinking about other options, and clearly Tom Doak is one of the best golf architects in the world, has done some amazing work on sand, and so we got in touch with Tom Doak, And you know, his words were, if you can do it sooner than later, I might be able to work it in.
Yeah.
And that was music to our ears. Like, all right, let's get going. Let's go soon. And so we put it on turbo and worked real fast to make it happen.
If people aren't familiar, the location for Pioneers Number 10 is at the old Pitt Golf Course, about 4 miles south on Highway 5 down in Aberdeen. So, you know, it's interesting because I never heard that Cora Crenshaw had done a routing about 10 years ago. Did it follow the original pit design? And will this, the Tom Doak design, kind of follow what the pit was? Or will it be a completely just use of the land however he wishes?
Totally different. You know, so a golf course sits on approximately 250 acres of land, plus or minus. And so again, we have 900 acres. So it's not redoing the pit. The pit, you know, sits kind of horizontally. This is kind of an east to west piece of land. And so it's long and narrow, if you will. And so the pit is on some of that land, but no, this is not a redo of the pit. This is going to be a totally new golf course. The Doak routing sits kind of on the western side of the property, and it's neat because it touches kind of three different types of terrain. It does touch some of the old pit tailings, you know, that has some really interesting landforms.
Yeah.
It moves north into some untouched, you know, pine forest land, and then it also bleeds down into these areas that have two ponds on them. So you're going to get a neat combination of some ponds that look very natural, these pine forests, and then these landforms that you wonder, how did these get here? It's some remnants of the mining operation.
I understand you called Tom Doak last May. How many times have you and he or you walked, ridden in the Gator across that property since then?
Since then, you know, I've probably been out there 20 different times. It's fun. You know, it's fun to go out to this untouched land and hear silence and see wildlife, turkeys, and all sorts of stuff. Doak has been out there probably 3 times since we've been in touch, maybe 4. The person who's been out there the most is the owner of Pioneers, Bob Dedman.
Huh.
You know, every time he visits, which is 6 to 8 times a year over the last 5 years, he's gone out to that property and begin to figure out, you know, how are we going to pull this off? And he just has kind of fallen in love with the land and is excited about what we're going to do. So, again, that gets back to how fortunate we are to be family-owned and to have owners who are in this for the long term. Mm-hmm. We acquired the land decades ago, have patiently waited for it, didn't develop it for some other purpose, waited until the right time, and that time's now.
And if people aren't familiar with Tom Doak, some of the domestic golf courses he's built, Pacific Dunes in Oregon. I know you've been to Bandon. Have you played Pacific Dunes?
Yep, I have.
Okay. Ballyneal in Colorado. Sebanac, is it Sebanac?
Sebanac
in New York. Old MacDonald in Oregon. Streamsong Blue, course in Florida. In fact, Streamsong was just sold for $160 million by Kemper Sports Group and some investors there. So interesting transition there at Streamsong, one of your competitors, of course. Tweaked Wiley Country Club, where the Sony Open is being played as we record this. Originally Seth Rayner did that golf course out in Hawaii. So when people have not heard of Tom Doak, or people that have, and there have been a lot of architects, but this is the first Tom Doak course. Was that a reason to have Tom do this? Because one thing I've learned in my 5 years here is Pioneers never copies anybody. They're usually exclusive, original. You're the first to do something. So the first Tom Doak, did that play into... obviously, you want a great golf course architect, but to have the first Tom Doak golf course in this destination, did that play even a small part into it?
Absolutely. We like to offer our guests variety and some of the best golf architects in the world. And so walking through and playing golf at Pioneers is like going through a golf architecture museum, if you will. You get Donald Ross's masterpiece. You get Gil Hance. You get Ellis Maples, Reese Jones, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Fazio. And now you'll have Tom Doak. And so, yeah, we love to be able to provide just a lot of variety. There's other destinations that have gone with one architect and they've gone deep with that architect.
Right.
I think that the latest, it's not a trend, if you will, but it just, most destinations now are giving people a lot of options when they come and visit. And some of it is all in the same ethos, kind of this natural, sandy, minimalist style of architecture. Tom Doak doesn't have a golf course in North Carolina. Look, I've played a lot of golf. I've traveled and had an opportunity to play a ton of golf, and I think I've only played 3 of Tom Doak's courses. And so that you still don't have a lot of them out there in the world, and I think it will be a treat for visitors to the destination to have a chance to play a Doak course.
You talk about the sand and building on sand, minimalist. What is so intriguing about building on sand? Is just because you can, you don't have to move a lot of rocks and clay. I mean, is it easier to just move the land?
I think that factors in for sure. You know, rocks would, don't know what that's like. I've seen some destinations that have rocks or courses that have rocks, and you know, they're using dynamite and heavy machinery. Sand is easier to move around as you're building it, but it also allows you to do some things. Think about the green surrounds of Pinehurst number 2 and these swales. And we're fortunate, you know, to not have a lot of clay or water drains after it rains. But imagine a clay-based soil up in the northeast somewhere. If you had this little valley off to the side, you know, a closely mown roll-off, almost like a grass bunker, it'd be full of water, you know, after a rainstorm. And it might sit there for 3 days. And so the sand allows you to do some shaping around the greens that, you know, after rain, it's going to just percolate and be gone. And so I think Ross, you know, that was one of his, the brilliance of his greens complex is at Pinehurst number 2. He could do things here that he wouldn't have been able to do in Boston, where he arrived when he came from Scotland. So I think it's easier to construct, but it also allows you to do some things with the complexes around the greens that you couldn't do otherwise.
In the midst of all the coverage of Pinehurst number 10, when you announced it, you said something that just like it really popped. You've been there for 25 years or so. And since you've been there, you've been more, Mr. Debman too, have been more editors instead of creators, which explain that because it's brilliant. Because you talk about, you know, what Gil Hanstead and redoing number 4, Cork Renshaw number 2, redoing, but doing original work, having a clean canvas.
Yeah.
Being from an editor to a creator.
And look, editing isn't easy. You know, you always have the opportunity to mess something up when you're editing and lose the essence of whatever it is. So we're proud of the editing that we've done. But yeah, it's the restoration of Pinehurst number 2, you know, was an amazing thing and changed the momentum of Pinehurst. But it was just changing what had already been done. You look at other places that have created destinations from nothing. I've always looked at that and thought, wow, that's got to be hard. You know, we're just tweaking, we're refining, we're being true to who we are and changing. The brewery, for instance, you know, was an old power plant in the heart of the village of Pinehurst. The building was not operable for 30 plus years, but we took something that was already here and turned it into something new. The brewery, the cradle, you know, was the existing first holes, of course, 3 and 5. I guess that was kind of creating, you know, you could say, so it's editing and creating at the same time. But anyhow, what we're going to do in Aberdeen is our first opportunity to create, you know, a destination and to establish new buildings that have never existed before and figure out what's the golfer experience, what do we want it to feel like? Because, and I'm sure you're going to ask, you know, it's not just one golf course, it's 900 acres.
Right.
And I already mentioned 250 acres is what it takes to build a course.
Right.
So there's room for more.
Wow. Well, when's Pinehurst number 11, Tom?
Well, again, we have a Cork Renshaw routing we've been sitting on. This is not touching that routing.
Yeah.
You know, this is the western side of the property. So we still have plenty of land to do more things in the future.
Okay. In episode 31, Phil talked with Ron Green about his memories of the last U.S. Open that was held here in the Pinehurst area, and they both look forward to the next U.S. Open coming in 24.
Very excited to see it.
What do you think about the growth of Pinehurst over the years? I mean, next year we'll have the U.S. Open on number 2, 25th anniversary of Payne's amazing historic victory there, the 10th course being added, the USGA second headquarters here, first U.S. Open anchor site, World Golf Hall of Fame coming back. Could you imagine, you know, when you saw Payne Stewart win in 99, that Pinehurst would become even a bigger, globally iconic destination when it comes to golf?
And what I think is great about it is that part of it has grown. And obviously the surroundings have grown too, but I don't think it's lost that small town essence, the sort of the feeling you get. And, the village type thing, and there's an embrace you almost get when you drive in here, and especially when you drive around and see it. And you know, I mean, golf is almost literally in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, you hear the church bells, you hear this, you drive around, there's a golf course here, there's a golf course there. It's just the USGA thing, I think, is an enormous feather in the cap of the area, and I think it's only going to grow. I think it's, what they've done with the resort and making it the anchor site. I mean, it's, you know, it's not like if something's coming, it's what's coming when, right. And you just identify it. I mean, that's, you say Pinehurst area and one word comes to mind and it's golf.
Yeah.
And, like I had a friend, couple months ago had been wanting to come here forever, he and his wife, and had never been. And so we came up and spent a weekend showing him around doing stuff. And he was already booked for the fall. He went, said, I'm bringing some clients up here and we're going to go. That's how much he liked it.
That's awesome. Well, when I know you love playing at Pinehurst, maybe name your top five courses in the area, not Pinehurst only, but I mean, are there other courses around here as well? What would you say is your five favorite here?
Well, I have to say the two at Country Club of North Carolina, because one of my best friends has a house there, and he's always basically has me a room there, so I go down there as often as I can.
Well, I know that those two courses, I'm on the state golf panel, so Dogwood is just ranked third in the state, and Cardinal 16th in the state, just hosted the ACC Championship, which Georgia Tech just won, so both incredible golf courses.
Yeah, he's got a house on the 17th hole of the Cardinal course, which used to be the 8th hole, so his house is called Old 8, so... I'm down there a lot. I love Pine Needles, Mid Pines. What they've done, what Kelly and them are doing at Southern Pines is tremendous.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think. I haven't gotten up to Tobacco Road, which I guess is a little out of the way from here. But, it's been years, but Tallamore, I remember going by, now I'm drawing the blank, the Jack Nicklaus Golf Course out.
Legacy?
Yeah, because I remember playing really well and getting to the final holes. Like, why did he want to do this to us? Because as I recall, it was really, really hard. It's just, there's all sorts of places here, I can go play the Cradle and just, I have friends who will drive down from Charlotte, have lunch. I mean, play the Cradle, have lunch, go putt the golf, the Thistle do.
Yeah.
Play the Cradle again, have dinner and come back. But, you know, you can do that. There's so many, I know you have packages and things like that, and just, my wife loves to come to Southern Pines, and it's sort of Bedford Falls in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And, just spend time wandering around. I think that's I'm going to Bandon Dunes later this summer on a trip, but that is all golf. I mean, Pinehurst is all golf, but with more, you know, you're not going shopping in Bandon Dunes unless you're going in one of the pro shops.
Right.
Here you could go out and go eat dinner at all these good places. Yeah. And, you know, you see the horse tracks and you know, all the lake and all those sorts of things. So it's, we play that, what are we going to do game in 3, 4, 5 years? Are we going to leave Charlotte? Well, Pinehurst is always the place we talk about.
Ray Owen and Chris Dunn discuss their plans for the Arts Council here in Southern Pines in episode 32.
House.
Yes.
For those not familiar, Southern Pines, Broad Street runs right through it. Mm-hmm. Connecticut Avenue heads down toward Fort Bragg, a short distance from there. Before you get to Duncraig Manor, on the left you have Weymouth Center, and on the right you have the Campbell House. So talk about Campbell House when people go there, and hopefully you've been there. If not, you need to go. And why should you, and what are you going to see there?
Oh, it's Campbell House is a remarkable place. It is tied to that area because I know you can speak to the history of it, but it is... There's parts of the Campbell House that predate the present-day Weymouth Center. It literally, parts were drug across the street by donkeys and horses.
Teams of mules.
Teams of mules. So our Brown Gallery, the biggest room we have, was originally part of the original Weymouth House.
Boyd House.
Boyd House. Okay. I knew I was going to get something wrong there. So it is a stately manor. 14-acre park. It is owned by the town of Southern Pines. We are happy to have them as landlords. We lease the first floor. It's a wonderful place to go to work. We have our galleries there. We have all our offices there. We sometimes do lectures. We can do classes. But we have pretty much maxed out that space. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I know you know that we just asked the town for permission to do an addition.
Sure.
They gave us their blessing after they saw the plan, which would add another 1,600 square feet, another 2 ADA accessible bathrooms, and an elevator that'll get accessibility up to the second floor, and then us access to the basement for storage, which we have none. But this will open up a lot of things. In addition to that, we're going to definitely make this a place of a destination by the art. The building will become artwork. I think I'm explaining that right. The ceiling of the great room will be a work of art done by people, artists that are tied to this area that are the world's best artists out there. I know you can explain it more when it comes to what they're going to do on the ceiling, but I just look at it. If you've never heard of the frescoes out in the mountains, there's a couple of churches, or it's probably four.
Yeah, 14 total.
14.
Actually, I think in Asheville, they're...
Asheville's part of it. There's a total of 14 spread throughout Western North Carolina.
Okay. My parents took me to a couple of those churches when my sister and I, we were 12, 13, and I didn't know what I was going there, but they are pretty remarkable. And thousands of people go see this just to see the frescoes. So we're going to, in addition to the exhibits that we do, the actual building inside will become a work of art that people will want to come see.
Dan is our podcast producer, destination storyteller, painter by trade.
Yep.
I painted the latest mural in Carthage. So he would love to be, sure, he's probably sitting there going, I would love to. I keep thinking of Lionel Richie dancing on the ceiling.
Like, oh, yeah.
So, no disrespect to the frescoes. I don't know why that popped into my head, but I thought about that song we talked about.
Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. So, how many people would this entail?
So, the project he's describing in Western North Carolina, all the artisans that created those all have ties to Southern Pines. Mm-hmm. Southern Pines, for the last 40 years, has a solid tradition throughout the world for classical realism. And so many of the most noted artists of our generation have trained in the town. And so we still have ties to those people. And so the concept for the ceiling is that it will be embellished with decorative plaster. One of the most noted decorative plaster artists in the world lives in Southern Pines.
He's a board member. Huh.
He's a board member.
Who is this person?
Patrick Webb.
Patrick Webb, okay.
And then various artisans that are tied to the frescoes in the western part of the state will be doing panels in the ceiling. Hmm. And just one of the counties, I think it's Avery County, 25,000 people a year come to see those.
I was going to say, well, will you be able to come and watch the progress of this? Or
yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And people will learn. And the idea is that this cultural corridor where the Campbell House is, you've got Weymouth Center, you have the Arts Council Campbell House, you've got Horse Country, you've got Fort Liberty, Fort Bragg. Along that corridor, it represents the unique culture of who we are as a people of the Sandhills. And it's a world-class destination. And so our concept is that we want people to come here and stay in the town, to stay in the hotels, to come visit and see the art, to understand who we are. The newcomers that come here, that move here, will understand us and become part of it. And I just think it'd be wonderful for all the shops and towns and breweries to have people come in.
And also, I mean, we're tourism from Ward County, so this is a huge opportunity. Yeah. And we look forward to it. When is this going to get started?
We're starting on it now. In fact, I'm working on the case statement now. And to be honest, Phil, all the different things that we've heard you talk about when you speak publicly, we really have taken it to heart because it's helped us understand a lot about ourselves. And then the language of this, because coming from the creative side, the way in which, the Chamber of Commerce, for example, or a CVB describes a destination or a brand, it's really helped us see the cultural brand in a clearer light.
Bob Farron, Pinehurst's secret landscaping weapon, discusses his take on the 10th course at Pinehurst coming in 24 in episode 33.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to it. It's going to be, ready later this fall, but opening in the spring is what I'm understanding.
Sometime in the spring. You know, it's interesting. So many properties and professionals in our career, you'd like to have the opportunity to do. We have four significant events next year, and most properties would love to have one in their career, but we'll open a new golf course. We'll have the USGA Golf House Pinehurst dedication and opening. We'll have the U.S. Open, and then we'll have the induction, the 50th induction class of the World Golf Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Four things in 1 year, you just don't know what to do.
Natalie Hawkins, in episode 34, discussed how major economic sea changes to the north of the Pinehurst area will affect the economy in general in 2024 and onwards.
Look at what's going on to the north of us. So the Toyota, the VinFast, and the Wolfspeed announcements, you know, all within the last 12, 18 months. Those three announcements represent over 11,000 jobs. So that is one third of all of Moore County's employment.
Wow.
One third. The total investment for all of those jobs is close to $13 billion. Mm. To put that in perspective of what's getting ready to happen to the north of us, prior to the revaluation, the entire Moore County tax base was $15
billion. Holy cow.
Three projects, wow. $13 billion in investment, yeah. All of Moore County's valuation, $15 billion in investment. In value. So these are significant projects, and I think that they will do a couple things. They're going to increase demand for housing. I think people are going to want to live in Moore County.
And affordable housing is a big deal.
Affordable housing is a big deal. I think we're going to see continued pressure on our wages as well, because all three of those projects average wages are above Moore County's average wages. So, you know, there's going to be some incentive for Moore County residents, yeah, to make that short 30, 45-minute drive to potentially work at some of those facilities. And that's a concern of mine. That's a concern of our employers, who, as we talked about just a few minutes ago, are having trouble, you know, finding the workforce that they need today.
Right.
That's without 11,000 new jobs within 30 to 45 minutes of us.
Yeah.
And that's just those three announcements. I mean, yeah, there's many, many more.
Sure.
So I think we're going to see wage pressure. We're going to see ancillary businesses. I think the demand for that's going to continue to go. And I also think that, you know, housing is, we're going to continue to have a need for additional housing that is affordable or attainable.
So what you're saying is you're not bored.
I'm not bored. No.
They're very busy.
No, so, they're very complicated issues, yeah, and they're all interrelated.
No question.
And there are many factors.
I mean, you're just trying to fit pieces of the puzzle together. I mean,
yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah. So, like, for example, we've recently recruited Bulldog Pipe as, yeah, a manufacturer. We recruited to Aberdeen. That was someone who, the owner of that company, lived here in Moore County, and had, his business was in Missouri, I believe, and said, I want to open a second plant. I'd really love to do it here.
Yeah.
We looked and looked and looked, couldn't find a site for him, finally found something that was off market. So we're spending a lot of our time hunting and pecking and saying, okay, where's a good place for this business to go, right? Where is it an appropriate place to go, mm-hmm, right? Looking at surrounding land uses, you know, is there residential around it? Is there infrastructure available? And we're just trying to connect property owners with businesses.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to connect the supply and the demand market. And oftentimes it's stuff that's not on the market.
In episode 37, Janine Driscoll of the USGA gives us inside information about what to expect from the U.S. Open in 2024.
To the 2024 U.S. Open here at Pinehurst Number 2. I know right now, as we tape this in August, there are packages. So I know we've gotten some emails and some inquiries as to, hey, when will individual day tickets go on sale? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, usopen.com, probably a quicker conduit. You'll see on usopen.com, not only are we selling U.S. Open tickets for 2024, but we also have our volunteer sign up directly on usopen.com. We're going to need more than 4,000 volunteers to be able to conduct the championship, and so we encourage everybody to do that. Right now, you're going to see some of the weekly packages. We just sold out on the Saturday and Sunday packages. I personally really like that that ticket that is right off of 8 and 14, I believe, that allows you to enjoy the experience on an outdoor pavilion. Mm-hmm. I've always found at the championships where we have those, that's where the excitement is. It's kind of like a beer garden atmosphere, and People just have great beverages. It's covered. You can see golf. You know, I really love the eighth hole of number two. Yeah. I think it's where a lot of great action is going to happen as well, that kind of corner. So I'd highly encourage people to look at those packages. You know as well as I do, it's hot in June. So right. Some of those packages, especially Trophy Club, they're going to come in handy.
Right.
A little bit later in the year, probably around the holidays, is when you're going to see us release some individual ticket options. I'm going to tell you specifically that we're selling a package called, it's an $18.95 package. It's about some grandstands that are going to be right on the 18th green. Reg Jones has talked about this a little bit. I think that's going to be the special ticket. Yeah. I've told all of my friends personally, this can be my 10th U.S. Open for the USGA. Mm. Can't believe that. That's gone by in a blink. My first Open was Pinehurst, but you know, you pick the days that you want to come to the championship. I would go for one full day, two full days of just having a great experience on site, and to put your investment there of being able to have the food options that you want, the beverage options that you want, the covered air-conditioned options that you want for a Friday or a Saturday, and then be able to do what we all do. Go home, watch it on TV, yeah. See the incredible coverage that is there. And that is what makes for a great individual experience.
In episode 41, Eric Kuester, vice president of Pinehurst Resort, talks about specific details that you can expect to see when you visit the home of American golf for the 2024 U.S. Open. We can't wait to see you there.
241 days away from the 2024 U.S. Open. I get asked as well, when are you going to start seeing the impacts of grandstands? When is that going to start? Yeah. When are you going to start seeing the impact of that Open? We know that it's here and it's coming.
When the net goes up on Maniac Hill, I feel like that's like, okay, this is real. This is happening. That's going to be, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be sometime in late January, early February. Mm. Then it's off to the races. Yeah. Then you're going to have, you know, grandstands that are going to be constructed. And the unique thing that's in 24 versus 14, Phil, is all those hospitality structures that had previously been set up in the bowl of Maniac Hill in the mm-hmm. driving range.
Yeah.
That's going to be on the golf course. Mm. So you're going to see hospitality on the 10th hole, specifically behind the 10th green on number two. Then on the 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th holes, you're going to have hospitality. That's going to feed into a more animated experience. I think mm-hmm. it's going to be elevated and more enhanced. So I think the corporate audience and hopefully the general admission attendees will feel there'll be a little bit more, you know, vibrancy to the U.S. Open versus separating the corporate hospitality mm-hmm. away from the golf course.
Yeah.
It's coming to the golf course.
Sure. And in the closing holes, too, where you've got the attendance, everybody's going to be there. There's going to be a lot of passion, a lot of energy, and
there's just one thing.
A lot of people drinking transfusions. it's going to be.
There's just one thing I want, Phil.
Yeah.
I want a really good winner.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with all due respect to previous winners, champions at Pinehurst, we need to have someone, you know, who we can, you know, market. As I'm looking at the young kid in the orange plus fours, reminiscent of Ricky Fowler, mm-hmm. but
he played well in 14.
Yeah, we need to find someone who's, you know, dynamic and got a good personality, and maybe American. Maybe.
Yeah, I would concur with you there. If you look at the grandstand from 2014 over the 18th hole. Kind of modest, I would say, compared to the artist rendering of what I see it's going to be for the 2024 U.S. Open. Plus, for the first time ever, it's going to have a suite built in the 1895 Club. Talk
That's
about
right.
that.
Yeah, thank you for plugging that. The 1895 Club will be the highest-end premium product for hospitality that the USGA will offer and has ever offered at the U.S. Open. And that will be programmed and built into that 18th grandstand. The 18th grandstand is going to be significantly bigger than it was in 14. That's it. That's another element of excitement for hospitality in 2024. It has been well received by the market. It's kind of that if there was something that would compare to the Green Mile over in Quail Hollow, that high-end hospitality, premium price, that's really where they're going with this particular product. So we've enjoyed, you know, helping USGA promote that and sell it, and it's been very well received by the corporate market.
Thank you so much for listening to this special episode of Paradise in the Pines. Thank you for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed yet, you should. It's free. And, you know, you'll just learn about when we have new episodes coming out. Anyway, thank you all. Happy New Year. Peace.